Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more online by going online to PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, I've never interviewed what is called officially a whistleblower, but I got one here today. His name is Marcus Allen, and if you can reflect back to just a few years ago as to what was going on down in Washington, D.C., you're going to understand this story very quickly. So before we jump into that, Marcus, number one, thanks for being here, because I know that traveling over from Indianland is a job.
Yeah, it was a quick trip. Thank you for having me on. God bless you and your audience.
Well, you're very kind. So tell us a little bit about Marcus.
Well, I'm from central Louisiana originally. Moved from there to Houston, Texas to grow up. I claim both, so I'm a Gulf Coast guy. Joined the Marine Corps out of high school. Did that for several years and then parlayed that into a job in the intelligence community for several years, which eventually I found my way to the FBI. Met my wife in D.C. working for the FBI, and we got a transfer down to the Charlotte field office. So about 15 years ago or so now, and that's where I was working before I got canceled by the FBI for blowing the whistle on shenanigans that had to do with January 6th, and I don't think they also took too kindly to me not going along with their SHOT program either. So that's kind of how I ended up here today with you, Manny.
Well, when you look back at what happened on January 6th, 2021, not a pretty day in Washington, D.C.
Nope.
And as a result of all that, a lot of arrests were made. A lot of high-ranking officials were saying this and that and this and that. And you basically took issue. Well, let me go back. Your job, as part of your job with the FBI, was to gather information on what was going on down there?
Yep, absolutely. So my job with the FBI essentially was an intelligence specialist. The official title is Staff Operations Specialist. But for regular citizens, it's essentially a poor man's intel analyst. So I gather in information, and I feed it to the operational squad. And I work with the JTTF here locally at the Charlotte field office. So everything I did was in line with what my job description was and normal duties would have been.
So you're basically assigned to do what you could do to figure out what really did happen.
Absolutely.
On January the 6th.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And in the course of that, you found out, as I understand it, you basically were running into information that was au contraire to what was being espoused by your superiors.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah, so I brought this information to the attention of my squad mates and supervisors over the course of several months, which during that time frame, people seemed appreciative of the information that I was sharing until I shared a bit of information in September of 2021. Where I questioned the testimony of then FBI Director Chris Wray. I basically didn't think he was being forthright as far as the activities of FBI assets on the grounds of the Capitol on January 6th. I reported that to my chain of command, didn't run to the media, literally went straight to my chain of command with it. And then that's essentially where my saga begins, because they took issue with my stance in that regard.
Okay, so let's step back. When you say about intelligence assets, the FBI had, people undercover that were in this crowd?
Right, yeah. It's been confirmed now, at least publicly, that there were at least 24 FBI sources on the ground that day. Unconfirmed, I've seen things estimating as high as 200 or over 200. That hasn't been flushed out yet, but what has been confirmed is that there were at least 24 sources on the ground that day at the behest of the FBI.
So you're going back and you're telling your superiors that, we did have assets down there, despite what Director Wray was saying?
Correct, absolutely.
Director Wray had said said there was nothing out there.
He essentially gave the impression that there were no FBI assets on the ground that day. There was an exchange between him and Senator Klobuchar. He just kind of left it hanging in the open that there were no FBI assets on the ground that day, which obviously now we know is false. And that's what I took issue with. So.
All right. So when you took issue with this, did you take issue with it with your direct superior?
Correct.
And he followed it up the line to Ray or to one of the elected officials?
Yeah. Why? So the local office, our chief division counsel, essentially was bothered by it. So their issue with me was, why are you questioning the testimony of the FBI director? And I told them, well, this is part of our job. We have to look for all threats outside and inside. And we need to give these people a fair shake. If there's information that can essentially be a mitigating factor for a lot of these people that the organization is running down, we need to flush that out, you know, as far as being moral and ethical, you know, law enforcement officials is concerned.
And your local, your superior was saying, you don't want to go down this route, you need to keep your mouth shut?
Essentially, the mantra in the office, because D.C. was very hot to trot about chasing everybody down, the mantra in the office, at least from leadership, was keep your head down, don't say anything, stay off the radar, don't want any headquarters attention. It's likely because I think the deputy director at the time had said at a meeting with the SACs that if anyone has a problem with the January 6th investigation, they can talk to me directly. So probably a chilling effect had gone out across leadership to where they didn't want to be the contrarian in the group. And so that's likely where my local leadership's concern was we don't want any negative attention from headquarters.
So were you the only FBI agent who realized that there were 24 to 200, whatever it is, undercover FBI agents, or were there others?
No. I mean, we would have conference calls and whatnot, and I would be one of the few people to speak up. But then after the conference calls would be over with, some people would, they'd come talk to me in the break room or in the hallways and that sort of thing, and they'd tell me, hey, man, we secretly agree with you, or we see what you're saying. And I would ask them, well, why aren't you saying anything on the call? And they were like, well, I don't want to be the one that gets smashed down. So we'll let Marcus get smashed down, but we're not going to join in.
we'll let him get a kick. All right.
Yeah.
So Marcus decided
that
I just can't sit on this.
No.
And have an untruth be put out there to the American people. We did have undercover FBI people in that crowd, in that riot.
Right, yeah. And so it's funny because during this whole process, I reported directly to my chain of command. I never went directly to the press. So how this ended up in the press was literally like their doing, because that conversation got shut down at the end of September 2021. And I was essentially told, we don't want to hear anything more about this. Thank you for your perspective. We understand your viewpoint. And at that point in time, I thought, hey, we're good to go. They want me to shut up. I've gotten, you know, my point across, my duty to at least speak up and say something and do something. Okay, fine. Then the COVID-19 mandate comes along, and I'm not going along with that either. So now I'm pretty much...
You're being a bad boy.
So pretty much I'm a thorn in their side at this point. And we found out in discovery throughout the process that my local chain of command, they were okay after, I guess, the initial meeting at the end of September in regards to my contention with the January 6th investigation. But once they found out that I wasn't going along with the CV-19 mandate either, then I was a problem. And so at that point, they made a recommendation to the security division that I have an internal investigation opened up on me.
So you're not going to get any Christmas cards from Christopher Wray,
no,
or from Anthony Fauci or anybody. You've just been a bad dude.
Right. And, you know, and they also had an internal database going as well for the CV-19 mandate, which just from, you know, my time as an intel guy looked pretty communistic to me. And I'm like, I'm not voluntarily putting my name in some database so they can track who and who isn't taking the shots. So the whole thing just stunk to me. Plus, also, I'd seen a number of doctors who'd put their reputations on the line speaking out against the mandates and whatnot, to the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going along with this. My spiritual sense, my spidey sense was all, this is bad, something ungood is going on here. This, you know, and I thought it maybe was fraud. So I was like, I'm not going to legitimize any portion of the fraud. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to go with the exemption because I think this whole thing is fraudulent and I can't legitimize any portion of the fraud. So once I closed in on that mentally, spiritually, I wasn't going to play the game.
So just a little sidebar, did you ever get COVID?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I've gotten sick and whatnot, but not like deathly sick or anything. So,
All right. So you didn't take the shots.
No.
And you're trying to tell everybody that the truth of what happened on January the 6th as far as the FBI was. We had people there in that crowd.
Right.
So what about these FBI agents that were there in the crowd? Didn't any of them come forth and say, hey, we were there?
No, I would probably assume not. So if they were there a part of it, they're probably hiding underground at this point.
You didn't know who they were?
I didn't know who they were.
Right.
It's just a matter of practice that with large-scale events like that, it's kind of like a layup. It's like, of course, there's going to be FBI assets at that sort of an event. So for me, for the director to basically not clear that up and to almost kind of lie about it, I was like, well, that's not right at all, because we always have FBI assets, that, especially large-scale events like that where there were allegations of election fraud. The turnout for that was going to be in the hundreds of thousands, and everybody on board knew it. It's just a layup that we're going to have people there. So to say that we didn't have people there at all is kind of like really weird.
Well, it's just as weird when you find out after the fact that Trump, the president then, 45, had warned Nancy Pelosi, who was responsible for the Capitol Hill police, to get these people there because it could be a big crowd, and she did nothing.
Right.
She did nothing. So the purpose of the FBI undercover people there was to what? Just gather information as to what was going on?
Yeah. So what their authorized purpose would have been, if there was an authorized purpose to be there, is typically we have people who are like subjects of investigation, that sort of thing.
Right.
And they're sometimes drawn to these types of events. And so we have a public safety stake in that regard. And we don't want these people to show up to an event and cause any mayhem or ruckus or chaos and that sort of thing. And so what we would have assets or informants or sources there doing is essentially keeping an eye on these people that we're tracking to see what they're up to. Now, that would be an authorized purpose. Now, if there were other people there under any other auspices or direction, I don't know that directly. I just know from my experience working domestic terrorism with the FBI that anytime there was a major event and we were suspicious that a guy we were tracking was going to be there, we wanted to make sure that we had eyes on these people so that something nefarious didn't occur or take place.
Well, so all hell broke loose.
Right.
Would those agents who were there undercover, would they assist the Capitol Hill police in stopping it?
I do not know. You would hope so, that would be their natural, but that's the thing we don't know, is it's like, okay, who was a UCO, so an actual officer of the Bureau that was there in an undercover capacity, but then there's also called UCEs, undercover employees, and then there are informants. So what we really need to have flushed out, which hopefully with a new director, is what total number of FBI or other government assets from other agencies could have been DHS, ATF, perhaps even DOD, who all was on the grounds that day, and what were they doing on the grounds that day? What was their authorized purpose? So really, there really needs to be a reopening of that whole investigation to see who did what, why did they do it, when did they do it, you know, at what point did you think you went too far, you know? So all of that has to be flushed out. What were you doing there? Who told you to be there? It has to be reinvestigated, in my opinion.
Well, as we sit here,
we're
just, a half an hour away
from
the Senate taking a final vote on Kash Patel,
who
has made it very, very clear he's going to clean house at the FBI.
Right.
So you for sure think this is going to be right on top of his list?
I think this is definitely going to be on the top of his priority list, is to figure out what exactly went down on January 6th, who knew what, when, why, and why were these decisions made. And likely there will be some people who were on the grounds there who maybe had an authorized purpose, but I'm very suspicious there were a lot of folks there who maybe did not have an authorized purpose, or whatever they were told is bunk. So that has to be flushed out.
All right, well, you became the fall guy.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But would you expect that once Patel gets into this office and he figures out where the desk is and the paper clips and what have you,
yep,
that he's going to give you a call to say, hey, I want to hear what your version of all this is?
I wouldn't expect a call directly, but a lot of the advocacy groups and other whistleblowers I've spoken to have been in contact with either him or personnel affiliated with him, and we have been contributing like ideas and concepts and that sort of thing. So in that regard, I know I will definitely have an impact on what's going to happen there as far as recommendations and that sort of thing.
So how many other whistleblowers were there for this particular event?
I know it's at least over 10. Publicly named, there's myself, then there's Garrett O'Boyle, Steve Friend, Kyle Serafin is another one that's been named publicly, George Hill out of the Boston field office has been named, and then there are several others who are unnamed publicly that I'm aware of and have been in contact with, and that's just from the FBI. There are other whistleblowers from IRS, DHS, and other agencies who have also reached out to some of the advocacy groups I've been in contact with. Empower Oversight is the main advocacy group that's been helping us out, but ACLJ has helped out along the way, as did Judicial Watch, and mainly working with Jim Jordan's office and the Weaponization Committee in general.
So these other FBI whistleblowers, they basically were telling their superiors the same thing that you were telling them?
Yeah, everyone got canceled in some way. But how we went about getting canceled, everyone essentially was let go or suspended or, you know, punitively retaliated against by the Bureau in slightly different fashions. So each one of them made some kind of a whistleblower disclosure about misconduct with the FBI. It could have been spying on parents at school board meetings. It could have been the spying at the Catholic churches. It could have been collusion with private corporations. You know, for sharing information about private citizens. But the unique, I guess, thing that united all of us was all of us were, for the most part, military veterans in some way. We were all Christians for the most part. And then I think almost to a T, none of us went along with the COVID-19 mandate program. So amongst us, those are the commonalities that we found. Military veteran, Christian, and we didn't go along with the COVID-19 mandate program.
But you were the only one who was whistleblowing about January the 6th.
Correct, specifically. Right. George Hill had some information pertaining to January 6th as well that helped out my whistleblowing complaint. And that information was shared at the May 2023 hearing.
All right, we're going to take our mid-program break. When we come back, we're going to figure out how the big arm of the FBI tried to destroy you and cripple you forever. Which only the federal government has the power to do. Makes me mad just to sit here and think about it. As we continue our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, relax here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, fresh subs and salads, that's what we do here at Substation 2, even for those of you from Indianland. The way we do it is in the white letters to anticipate and try to bring more people in here. And then count of three, we're going to bellow it out together. Are you ready? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
The Piedmont Medical Center Women's Tower at our Rock Hill campus boasts fully furnished labor and delivery rooms and family care suites. Our Level 3 NICU is equipped to provide advanced medical treatments for premature infants and infants who may have complications. Inside the Women's Tower, families begin bonding with their special deliveries in private family care suites, allowing mom and baby to relax with ease. Learn more at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
With Comporium, you get way more than home security. You get eyes everywhere. Remote access to lights and locks from anywhere. And right now, you'll get a secure home for a lot less than you'd think with anytime live video streaming, remote temperature control, and 24/7 monitoring. We're more than your internet company. We're your peace of mind, never felt this easy company. For zero stress levels, they connect it to what matters most. Comporium, always ready.
Soup, here it is. Soup, here it is. Fight those cold weather chills with a cup of hot soup at Substation 2. We serve a rotating selection of flavors and never know what we feel like fixing, but it's all delicious. Soup and sandwich, what a great combo at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winter.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. And if you are just tuning in, make sure you go back online to WRHI.com and pick up the first part of this program, because it's a very interesting story. Marcus Allen, Marine Corps, I don't want to say graduate, but you were in the Corps for how long?
I was in the Corps for about 5 years, 2000, 2005.
All right. And yep. Worked his way into the FBI. You were with the FBI for how many years?
Total 8 years, 6 years as an official employee and 2 years as a contractor.
Okay. Yep. So he's with the FBI. He was trying to spill the beans as to what was really going on during the January 6th riots down at Capitol Hill, because he had talked to agents who were undercover there, even though the director, Christopher Wray, said we didn't have anybody there. And you laid this information out to your superiors, and they basically told you, shut up, don't say anything more, and you just couldn't live with that. Is that basically right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the story, but the information involved also of note is it's all open source information that I utilized to inform the superiors. So for intel people, there's these different intel disciplines. There's IMINT, which is like imagery intelligence. There's SIGINT, signals intelligence. And then, like the last 20 years or so, the term OSINT has been coined, which is essentially open source information. So that could be information from radio broadcasts, gray literature from conferences, so like pamphlets and that sort of thing. It could be publicly available media, investigative reporters, and that sort of thing. So a lot of the information that I shared with them was open source information, but it would be, you know, pictures and stories and whatnot that investigative reporters who are there that day, or from people who are there that day sharing their pictures, would have just given over to these different media outlets. So everything I shared with them was publicly available, which the Bureau has acted on publicly available information in the past before. So it wasn't anything out of the ordinary, and it wasn't like I went rifling through the system to, you know, to find this information. It's information that was just right out there in the open for you to consume and look at and inquire about.
And again, in the first part of the program, part of your job with the FBI was to help gather the information on exactly what was going on January the 6th.
Right.
And you found a story that was au contraire to what Director Wray was telling the committee.
Correct, yeah. New York Times ran an article essentially where confirming that there were two informants that were real-time reporting back to their FBI handlers as the event was, as the riot was unfolding. So that story on its own essentially debunked what the director had said, you know, a couple of months before. So I don't know why they got all bent out of shape, you know, about me essentially reporting the obvious, you know.
What had already been in time.
Right, right, yeah.
All right, so the long arm of the FBI reaches out because they're mad at you.
Right.
And they proceeded to do what?
So they essentially canceled me. They used the security clearance process in retaliation. And they can do that because there's a lot of loopholes with it, and there's not a whole lot of oversight. So essentially, they can make a subjective judgment, draft a document, and then you're just in this limbo forever. And it works because most people don't actually push back or fight it. And you just disappear. Your name has been sullied. I believe the letter I got said that my allegiance to the United States was called into question, and therefore my clearance was being suspended. And the citation that they had on there was conspiratorial views in regards to the events of January 6th, which that just seems like something straight out of a communist playbook. You're canceling an intelligence analyst whose job is to look at all different perspectives and then provide you those perspectives or assessments, which you can choose to act on or not act on, but you're essentially canceling an intel analyst for giving you news you didn't want to hear.
So by cancellation, does that mean you're still on the payroll, but you don't have a job, per se?
Yeah, so they essentially suspended me without pay from that point, and that was January of 2022. But what led to that, there's a whole funny it's not funny, but the backstory to it is essentially I was prohibited from going into FBI workspace because I wasn't going along with the COVID-19 mandate program. And so there was a whole interrogatory back and forth process going on with that before they then came back and canceled me for conspiratorial views in regards to January 6th.
So you got two strikes against you.
Yeah. So Thanksgiving week 2021 was officially my last week in the office for the FBI. And then this back and forth interrogatory process started between me and them over the COVID-19 program, where essentially I had to give them my reasons for not going along with the program, which I did. And I was waiting on their response to that when I had a meeting with one of the assistant special agents in charge and the chief security officer from the Charlotte field office. And what my attorneys at the time referred to as the infamous Cracker Barrel meeting. So we literally had a meeting in the Cracker Barrel parking lot over across from Carowinds down the street here, a little memorial spot for us now. And that's where I got my suspension letter from the FBI. It was in the parking lot of the Cracker Barrel across from Carowinds.
I love it. So we only got about 3 minutes left, and I want to make sure we have enough time here. So you struggled with... you had no job.
Right.
The FBI had done you in.
Right.
So you fought it.
Correct.
You hired an attorney. How did you go about this?
Yeah, so I lawyered up at the time. The attorneys were Bigley Ranish, and then they quickly assessed they're just using the administrative process to punish you and to bleed you out financially. We need to get an advocacy group on your team, or they're just going to bankrupt you. We got with Judicial Watch. Fortunately, Judicial Watch took us in. Did a great job by us, sued the Bureau on our behalf in December 2022. That really got the ball rolling because now the courts were involved and they couldn't just slow walk it internal to the organization. And then we also reached out to a whistleblower advocacy group called Empower Oversight because we believed they were using the security clearance process to retaliate. So we filed a complaint with the Inspector General. They reported that to the Weaponization Committee, and then I was invited to come and testify at a Weaponization Committee hearing in May of 2023, which I did.
So they reinstated you?
And then long-term, all the battle, they reinstated me. At least security clearance was reinstated as part of the settlement, and I got my name cleared, which was the first time in the history of the FBI that they'd ever gone back on a security clearance revocation decision. So we literally set precedent there.
And you got your back pay.
And I got the back pay, which we're still ironing out now because apparently they can't do math. So.
Well, we're learning a lot about that right now. We're learning a lot. Yeah. All right, so we have about 25 seconds. What's going to go for you now? What are you doing now?
Right now, I guess center of gravity-wise, I just want people, if you don't have a relationship with God, go to BibleGateway.com and start reading the Gospel of Mark. And then go from there. Make sure you pray every day. Pray your Our Father at least every day. And then just be active in your community. Local politics, state politics, do whatever you can. School board, local rep. Do what you can to be active in your community. Pray to God. Read the Constitution and support good governance, which is what we got now.
All right. I have a feeling there's going to be a sequel to this interview somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
But Marcus Allen, thank you for coming over from Indian Land. Thanks to our mutual friend Frank Trotta for putting this all together for us. And good luck to you.
Yep, amen.
Quite a story. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. One more time, what we do here in Substation 2 is sheer magic. Yeah, fresh subs and salads, and we do it 6 days a week. The way we do it is in the white letters, and we're all going to bellow it out together at the count of three. Are we ready? One, two, three.
Slice.
Garden. Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.